Now I'd like to introduce our main speaker for the evening, Jerrica from National City.
Please do not touch the mic. Okay.
Don't.
I'm not going to touch it. Are we ready? My name is Jerrica. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jerrica.
You know, I've been kind of sweating this, and I realize that the reason I'm nervous is because, you know, I just kind of don't want to say anything really, really stupid, especially for those people who know me here. And I thought to myself, that's all about ego. That's not about God. And what I focused on were some of the people here that said they had less than a year of sobriety, and this is why I'm here. This is my purpose. So I certainly hope I can say at least one or two things that will touch and help somebody tonight. You know, right from the beginning, I was sort of a little bit different due to the fact that I was born in Holland and I was raised in Mexico. And so I was the only little Dutch Mexican on the block. And, you know, I wondered why everybody else had dark hair and dark eyes and I didn't. But, you know, I didn't. After a while, I just sort of thought, well, that's just how it is. I spoke Spanish before I spoke English. I began speaking English around 8 years of age. You know, sometimes we'll hear people in here that, and I was one of these people. I used to bash my mother and bash my dad. And, you know, I can understand where people are coming from when they do that. But now that I've gotten a little older and wiser, not just chronologically, but also in this program, I realize that, you know, these people just really, really, they didn't know how to do it any better. And if they had known, I'm sure that they would have. I was sort of a very early bloomer. I was like the biggest kid on the block. And when other little kids were like, you know, just really sort of, how can I put this politically correct? I really sort of blossomed in every way. Let's just put it that way. And here I was, you know, and I was 9.5 years old, and I began my monthly that makes me a woman thing. And so my mother, she being very concerned about me, she introduced me to 7 and 7. And so I drank whiskey and 7-Up, and I got to the point where I couldn't wait for my monthly to come around, you know, because I knew I was going to get some quick medicine, and boy, that made me feel great, you know. And I was always worried about my weight. Even as a kid, I was shopping in the chubby section, and to this day, I'm very worried about my weight. It's just never really stopped. But so what my mother did in order to help me, she put me on the banana and port wine diet. You know, it was very, very effective, you know. All the bananas, you know, went black, but the port wine got drank. And I, you know, I did lose some weight. I was very, you know, it was a good diet for me. So you know, time went on, and I went to this junior high school, and I started being truant all the time, and there I was 14 years old, and I was going out with a man that was 20, you know, and so I started being truant with this person, and I don't know what happened, but I told my mom, I said, I don't want to be like this anymore. I want to be a good girl. Okay. So she said, okay, honey, let's put you in an all-girls Catholic school. Oh, yeah. So I went to this all-girls Catholic school, and I can tell you that in our graduating class, 7 of us were pregnant. And so much for the good girls, all-girls Catholic school. But at that point, I started to recognize certain things. I have to be very careful because drugs are a big part of my history, and this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I'm going to share in a general way. Let's see. Okay. First of all, once again, being very concerned about my weight, I found these little things, you know, that if you took enough of them, you weren't hungry anymore, like at all. And so I started taking these little things, and they came in little rolls, and, you know, so that worked for a while. But then I started taking too many of them. And at this point, the all-girls Catholic school had merged with the all-boys Catholic school. And I remember having a boyfriend. And you know what? I don't know quite how to explain all that happened, but I started drinking. I was a binge drinker. I've always been a binge drinker. I started binging, you know, like at the dances, and taking these little things that were making me lose my appetite. And it seemed like some people could take some and drink some, and it was okay. But me, you know, I just didn't know when to stop. So I just kept going and going. And then I went to the store, and they had this product on the counter. I really liked the sound of it. It was called Quiet World. You know? I mean, doesn't that sound really, you know? Don't you feel, like, relaxing when you hear that? You know? So, anyway, I bought the whole bottle, you know, because by this time my world was like this all the time, you know, because of these things. And so I took the whole bottle of Quiet World, and my world got really quiet. And so somehow in between the zig and the zag and the alcohol in the quiet world and the things that were making me lose weight, I got very depressed. And so what I did was I slashed my wrists. And I remember my boyfriend at the time, he got his sister to come over, and she said that I was crazy. And, you know, to this day, when somebody says, "You're crazy," I can't stand it. I hate that, you know. So what if I am? But don't tell me I'm crazy. But, you know. So, you know, time went on, and I decided to become a little bit more responsible, see. So I decided I would go to work for National Steel and Shipbuilding. And I became a pipe fitter and a ship fitter. And I worked for National Steel and Shipbuilding, and I made $1,500 cash, and I bought my Mazda, you know. And that little car, it could really move. Excuse me, I've had a cough for about a month, but excuse me. So I was zipping all around, you know, and I was one of maybe about 15 women at National Steel and Shipbuilding. I was working with all men. So I met this good old boy from Arkansas. And boy, did I want what he had. And, you know, so, I mean, oh, God, we were taping this. But anyway, he said to me, so we went out for a little bit, you know, and I just thought he was, oh, my gosh, I don't know. So he said, he asked me the magic question. He said, "Do you want to have sex with me?" And I said, "Yes! Are you kidding me?" He said, "If you want to have sex with me, you have to marry me." I said, "Oh, well, bring on the preacher man. Where is the preacher man?" So that was the first time I got married. It, you know, really, I took a lot of thought and a lot of, you know, I was very careful about my choices, you know. Well, it didn't last too long, actually, because even though I was still drinking and using, I was supporting the family. I was putting the meat on the table. I was paying the rent. And he was fooling around with some other girl while I was at work at National Steel and Shipbuilding. So, you know, I came home one day, and he decided to become violent with me. And that was not the last time that I would pick a man who likes to abuse me. And I'm not proud of that, but that is a part of my story. I used to think, maybe because I was raised in Mexico or something, I thought these macho, you know, get tough, I'll tell you what to do, grab you by the hair kind of men would, you know, that was right up my alley. But, you know, if you go out with people like this for any length of time, you begin to sort of understand that that is not all what life is made up of. So anyway, he bought a motorcycle, and he moved the motorcycle into our bedroom, right, you know. And it was a candy apple red Triumph, okay. And there he was with his motorcycle, and there I, you know, it just got to be a little too much. So he started to hit me, you know, and one day he came home, and I knew what he was going to do, but I was waiting for him. And I was in the corner, and it was dark, and he couldn't see me very well, and I had a couple of dog chains. And when he came in the door, I took those dog chains to him, and I made mincemeat out of that man. And I am not proud of that, and that was not the first time either. So we did get that marriage annulled, and I went on to a town called Boulevard. Now, I don't know if anybody knows where Boulevard is. You know those bumper stickers that say, "Where the hell is Boulevard?" Yeah. Well, I used to live there. And I moved into a trailer up there, and I began some of my worst drinking and using that I've ever, you know, it just got worse and worse. And one of the things I would do is I was a cocktail waitress, and I would go to these, you know, I'd go to work, and sometimes after work I'd go to these bars, and after a lifetime of sort of either, you know, the things that I went through, some of the things that I went through, I don't know, you can maybe just imagine it, but a couple things happened to me when I was a little girl that shouldn't happen to any little girls. I'll just leave it at that. And when I was 15 years old, I was raped. Well, I'm saying that not for shock value, but because it is part of what made me me. And when you're abused and you're really young, what happens is the mind gets a little torqued and you start to choose people that will abuse you again. I don't know why, don't know how, but it does happen. Well, I started to go to these bars in Boulevard. And what I would do is I would go up to a guy and I'd say, "Hey, baby, want to go out in the parking lot?" And he'd go, "Yeah." And I'd take him out and beat the shit out of him. And so, you know, I don't do that anymore. So, boy, it's time for me to get sober pretty soon, isn't it? I mean, I did marry my second husband, and he was my drug supplier, and I really wanted what he had. So I married him, and he was married to two other women at the same time that he was married to me. And I used to wonder why he wasn't home very much, you know. But, so he did come home, and he started doing the same thing that husband number one used to do to me. And what I did was I drove him out to the Arizona desert, and I threw him out of the car. He backhanded me in the car, and I threw him out of the car, and I left him there. And I hope he's not still walking. You know? So, enough of that. I think you can all get the point of what happened to me. My mother, bless her heart, my mother is this little Mexican woman. She's about 5'5", you know. She's really, really skinny. She thinks that eating is a waste of time. You know, she eats because she wants to live. I live to eat, you know. So anyway, but she really loved me. And so she did an intervention all by herself on me. Because on 11/29/86, I went and I got a lot of, you know, those little cocktails for two that they used to sell. Yeah, well, I bought about a dozen of them, and I was all by myself in the car, you know. And so there I was, drinking these cocktails for two. I used to work for the Humane Society, and I was feeling lonely, so I unlocked the gate, and I got this large black Dane, a Great Dane, and I sat him in the car with me because I wanted some company, you know. And all the men were gone, dead, or whatever. No, I'm just kidding. So anyway, that was the day that I passed out at the wheel. I was on my way to go score what I was going to score. And I was drinking these cocktails for two. Excuse me. And I hit bottom that night. I hit my head on the wheel, and I woke up in the morning, and my car, my little Mazda, it was right between these two boulders, and all four wheels were up in the air, you know, up in the air. And I was stuck in between these two boulders, and it was cold. It was really cold that night. And had to do something with the Great Dane, too, you know, couldn't just leave him there. And so I stole the car that night. And I got caught. And so anyway, I went to jail. That wasn't the first time I went to jail. And so my mom does this intervention on me, and she takes me to see the psychiatrist. And the psychiatrist has this shriveled up little hand, you know, just like a little stump. And I said, "Well, how'd you get that?" And she said, "Well, honey, I was an IV user just like you." Well, that didn't impress me. I figured she had bad aim, you know. Well, you know, it didn't work. It didn't work. So my mom took me to Crossroads in the Hillcrest area. I was willing to go any place. I didn't care at that point if the house was gay. You know, I didn't care what it was. In fact, my very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous was an all-gay male meeting. I felt perfectly at home, you know. And they were very kind to me, and nobody said, "Hey, you're a woman. You don't belong in our gay male meeting." And they actually did let me sit there with all these gay men in this meeting, and that was my first meeting. And so I went to Crossroads, and I stayed there for 7 months, and I didn't know anything about women. I really didn't, you know. I knew how to manipulate men. At the end of my using and drinking, I was married to one man, and I was seeing two other men because I needed all three of their paychecks for my habit. That's how bad it had gotten. I don't know how many hundreds of dollars a day, but it was a lot. So I knew about men, and I knew what to do to manipulate men, but I didn't know about being around women. So here are these 14 other women in this recovery home, and man, you know, I thought I was so hot, you know. I would take my black negligees, and I'd say, "Well, it's time for the laundry," and I'd throw my little stuffed animal in there. I didn't know how to do the laundry. I didn't cook. I didn't do laundry. I didn't do any of that stuff, you know. And the little, you know, those stuffed animals that are stuffed with little white things, well, it burst open, and it got all over my beautiful, sexy black negligee, and it looked like some kind of polka-dotted thing coming out. So, you know, I didn't know how to cook, didn't know how to clean, didn't know how to do any of that stuff. But I stayed there. I stayed there for 7 months. And you know what? There was a woman there, and I'm not going to say her name because it's an anonymous program, but she looked like me. She was as tall as me. She had the same eye color. She had the same hair color. And she really wanted to have sex, okay? She really wanted to have sex. And I'm not saying this because I say sex is a bad thing, you know, because it tells us about this in our big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, that we shape a sound and safe, sane ideal, something like that. Well, she just went with this person, and she started drinking behind this drive, this sex drive of hers. And, you know, I really had to learn a lot from her because she never did come back. And I went to see her in intensive care unit, and she's exactly my age, and she must have looked like she was in her 70s. She was so burnt up. She was so fried. And that girl died. You know, so she could be standing up here tonight in front of you, you know, if things would have been different. You know, so I started watching my tendency in these areas, you know, like, so I got sober, and then my weight shot up to 200 pounds. And at 200 pounds, I didn't want to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was so ashamed of how I looked. And I was just following the directions in the big book. It said something about taking a little piece of candy. And I thought, well, if a little piece of candy is good, a two-layer cake's better. And so, you know, I'd sit down, you know, polish off a two-layer cake with a half gallon of ice cream and squirt it down with a quart of chocolate milk. And I was fine. I was fine. Yeah, all 200 pounds of me was fine. So, anyway, so I had to do some other things, go to some other programs for that too, because I realized if I didn't get to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't stay sober. Oh, thank you. I've got 20 minutes left. I went to a structured step study. And I can truthfully tell you, I have no idea what I read. I have no idea at all. But I could remember the faces of the people, and I could remember the eye color of certain women. Like certain women, I don't know if you've ever noticed it, but certain women have really blue, like real light, like fluorescent blue almost color eyes. I don't know. Has anybody ever noticed that? Am I the only one? You know, like, anyway, so I would look at these women with their eyes shining, you know, and the first woman that I went up to and I asked her if she'd sponsor me, she said, well, honey, I'm sorry, I'm an Al-Anon. I can't sponsor you. I'm not an AA. But, you know, the love of the people here to not turn me away, and she just sat there with me and she held my hand. And for about, I don't know how long, it was weeks and weeks, I couldn't speak. Because I was wall-to-wall speed sores. I had a sore on every part of my face, every part of my arm, every part of my body. And I couldn't string two words together. I really couldn't. And so I had to just keep showing up and listening to people. And went to that structured step study. And I really liked the big book, but I couldn't remember anything I read. But I just kept going back. I just kept doing what we do here. Over the years, I have... Some people say if you work the steps once, you never have to work them again. I don't know if that's true. Who am I to say it isn't? But for me, it didn't really work. I had to keep doing a continual house cleaning because you know what? Things would pop up. And I tell you, in sobriety... my sex drive got me in a lot of trouble. It really did. And I say that to you because I need to remember. I must have been a real... I don't know. I just wasn't in my right mind. I would let my drive choose people for me. And they were never good for me. Never. You know, and you would think that maybe I'd learn my lesson. You know, but then I'd be back, you know, in sobriety. I was in a couple of different relationships, and the one guy started physically abusing me. And in sobriety, I tried to run him over with my car, you know. So the thing about it is maybe there's something, you know, when you push a person, oh, I guess I'm rationalizing. Yeah, I'm rationalizing. Anyway, yeah, it was really going to be good, though, you know, it really was. So I decided I needed to go to anger management. Yeah, I went to anger management. I put myself through that for 365 days. And I learned all about anger management, you know, because I thought to myself, when I'm with these people, I'm becoming someone that I do not want to be. Because this is not the real Jericho. Hey! Should I say cheese?
Yeah.
This is not the real Jericho. The violent one. The one that's full of fear. The one that isolates because she's afraid to talk to you. She's afraid to have a relationship with you. She's afraid you might hurt her one more time, once again, one more nauseating time again. And it's something that I need to hear because today, I mean, I'm not done with sobriety yet, but today I live alone in National City in this house with three dogs, two cats, and four fish. You know, I don't have a husband. I don't have a boyfriend. And to tell you the truth, I'm working right now with my mentor on learning how to open my heart to love because I'm scared. You know, I'm really scared. People say, well, you only find your soulmate once in a blue moon. Well, I mean, how the hell should I know? He might be in Canada or back in Holland where I was born, you know. He's probably wearing wooden shoes or something. And how am I going to know? So for the time being, what I do is I've decided that if God ever decides to make me in a relationship again, whatever, relationship, marriage, whatever you want to call it, I would like somebody that I could talk to. I would like someone I can be friends with. And I don't want to, you know, lead with the sex thing because, you know, I finally learned my lesson. It only took me 21 years, you know. No longer. It took me longer. So, anyway, I have worked the steps in Al-Anon. I've worked the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've looked at some things in myself that I didn't want to look at. I went to certain groups, and I worked through the Courage to Heal handbook, which some of you may be familiar with. And my whole purpose was to understand that men are God's kids, too. You know, they have feelings. You know, just because of certain things that happened to me, I cannot keep taking it out on the next man and the next man. It's not going to work that way. That is not what God would want for me. Or for anybody, for that matter. So, you know, life is good today. I work for the Employment Development Department, for EDD, yes. And I was one of the ones in the unemployment line, and I applied for that job, and I did get that job. And, you know, every year I see myself grow. Every year I'm different with my coworkers. Every year I'm different with my family. You know, that stepfather who did to me certain things that fathers shouldn't do to their little girls, he's an old man now. He's got a bad back. He hurts all the time. And you know what? I've forgiven that man, and I see him once a week along with my mom. And I'll tell you why. Because when is enough enough? Those people that have done something wrong, it's time to forgive. It's time to drop the rock. I mean, am I going to continue holding this grudge forever? Who do you think that's going to keep in bondage? Not him. I mean, it might also keep him in bondage. But it's funny, when I hold a grudge or when I keep a resentment against one person, I think that it's only affecting myself and that person, but it's not. It's affecting people around me. It's affecting my animals. It's affecting my friends, my family. And so there are times, you know, when I feel a little bit uncomfortable around him. But for the most part, I see him. I forgive him. He's God's child. And, you know, my birthday's on May 15th, and his birthday is May the 24th. And on May 24th, nobody had done anything for his birthday. And I brought over a balloon, and I brought over some goodies and a card and a present. And it really felt good. It feels good to have that freedom. But if anybody in here is thinking, you know, that you really can't do that, you don't feel comfortable doing that, and you think it'll be a cold day in hell before you do it, I really do understand because I was there for a long, long time. It's only recently that things have started to change and things have started to open up for me. One of the things I want to say that's a little bit of a touchy subject, but, you know, I go to a church that's open to every denomination. They don't care if you're Buddhist, Christian, Catholic. They don't care if you're an atheist. They don't care if you're an agnostic. And sometimes, thanks, when I hear people talking about whatever church you go to or church you don't go to, I feel kind of sad, you know, because the truth is the truth wherever you may find it, okay? The Buddhist cannot call the Catholic wrong. The Catholic cannot call the Hindu wrong. And, you know, who are we here in Alcoholics Anonymous to put someone down for their religious affiliation? Whether you go to church, whether you don't go to church, whether you believe in God or whether you don't believe in God, you know, that's not a requirement for membership. So sometimes, you know, I hear people saying things and, you know, oh, well, stuff about churches. And I think, you know, what if there's someone in the room that really enjoys their spiritual calling, you know? And so I just want to kind of put that out there because I've sort of thought that over the years. So there. I really don't have a whole lot left to tell you about. I can tell you that my life is just, it's really wonderful. There are times when I think, why don't I have a partner? And then I remember why. Because he's still walking. He's in the desert. you know, and then I have to think about everything I do have, you know. Yeah, the gas is expensive. Yeah, the food is expensive, you know, but I got gas in my car tonight, and I got food in my belly. And I've got everybody here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my mother loves me. She loves me. And she sees me coming, and she's just like, she's so happy to see me. And what would have happened if at one point in my sobriety I would have said, I never want to see my mother again? Because I know, you know, when she didn't protect me in certain situations, I was really angry at her. I didn't want to see her again. But, you know, I'm glad that these things have sort of smoothed themselves out. I went to the gym this morning, and, you know, there's a bunch of all of us Mexican girls, we all get together, you know, and we're just kicking each other's butt and going, ooh, you look delicious, you know, and telling each other stuff like that, you know, and, well, we know what we mean, you know. So, you know, it's just everywhere I go, it's a good deal. It's a good deal. Fear of financial insecurity, it did leave me, and sometimes it comes back. And that's one thing I wanted to mention to you. If you were under the same misconception that I was, you know, like some people, when you read the promises, I think that it has to be that way for your entire sobriety. Oh, fear of financial insecurity? Oh, well, I'll never be afraid of being without money again, you know, because now I've achieved this level. Well, no, that's not true. It's a process like this, you know. So my animals are there. My friends are there. I don't have a ton of friends, but those friends that I have are good, dear, and true friends. And I'll tell you, the last thing I want to close with is last night I told some people in my Friday night meeting that I was going to be speaking here tonight. And I have never been this kind of person that, you know, gets into, like, groups, you know. Group this, group that. And to tell you the truth, that's kind of one thing about Alcoholics Anonymous that sort of put me off, because I'm a one-on-one person. I'm an introvert. I'm one-on-one. That's kind of how I do life. But last night, you know, I won't mention names, but there were some people that said that they would come to support me. And, you know, I really was touched by that. I was really... These people over here said that they were going to rent a video, and they came to listen to me talk instead of a video. I told them they should have rented the video. But But, you know, it's a good deal. And maybe things are not perfect, but I tell you what, they are better than ever. Better than ever. So stick around, okay? Because I need you.